Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of West Obsessed, where the writers and editors of High Country News discuss issues crucial to the health of the American West. West Obsessed is a collaboration between High Country News and KVNF Community Radio in Paonia, Colorado. I'm Kate Schimmel, High Country News' Deputy Editor Digital, in for Brian Calvert this week. In today's episode, we're talking about last weekend's Marches for Science, which took place in towns and cities across the region, as well as in D.C. To help me talk about this, I've got Associate Editor Maya Kapoor and D.C. Correspondent Elizabeth Shogren both joining me via Skype to talk about what they saw over the weekend and the implications of thousands of scientists marching in the streets. Hi, Maya.
Hi.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, how's it going, Kate?
It's good. Welcome to the show. So over the weekend, like I said, thousands of scientists, students, advocates, private citizens gathered on the National Mall to call on the Trump administration to support science and evidence-based policy. The march coincided with Earth Day this year. Noted scientists, including Bill Nye, gave speeches in D.C. and out west. Satellite marches took place in major metropolitan areas like Los Angeles, but also in smaller places like Silver City, New Mexico, and Grants Pass, Oregon. Elizabeth and Maya were both on the ground, Elizabeth in D.C. and Maya in Tucson, Arizona. Can you tell me a bit about your experiences? Elizabeth, what was it like in D.C.?
Well, it was really fun to see such a wide assortment of people coming out to support science. It felt like a, you know, summer festival of some kind with people, some of them dressed up in outfits, like there were these people walking around in huge T-Rex suits, which came in handy because they seemed to be waterproof. And that was a big thing about the day, is it was rainy and cold. You know, I saw somebody in a lab coat and an Einstein wig and lots of people dressed up as Mother Earth. Lots and lots of creative signs that talked about how important vaccines are for our health and how important action on climate change is and good science on climate change. It was a really fascinating group of people, and it was young and old, and kids were there, future scientists, and it was quite a gathering. It was also kind of miserable because it was raining and cold, and so to get into the rally, if you were as lucky as I was, you ended up having to wait in line for hours to get in through the security checkpoint, and that was really miserable. But anyway, there was a lot of camaraderie and chances to talk to fascinating scientists who came in from around the country and I'm sure around the world too.
Well, we're glad you came out on the other side without a cold. Did you happen to have a favorite sign that you saw? Was there one that was particularly interesting to you?
That's a really good question. I liked the ones that I love the image of our Earth. And so the ones that said things like, I'm with her, you know, with a big arrow pointing to a beautiful color picture of Earth. Those were pretty cool.
Maya, you were in Tucson. Does it sound like it was similar over there in Arizona? What was different?
Okay, so one thing that was that I thought was neat about Arizona in general is that Arizona has a population of about 7 million people, and there were 7 different events across the state. They ranged in size from less than 20 people to thousands of people. The one in Tucson was actually a rally, not a march, because it varies city by city. But in order to have a political march in Tucson costs over $20,000, and they couldn't raise the funds. So people still came, and they just held a rally at a park instead. And it was thousands of people, and it was really great to see the turnout. And I also had a few favorite signs. I loved the I'm with her signs as well. It was funny because I wasn't sure I was headed in the right direction. And then all of a sudden I just saw people walking around in lab coats and I knew I was near the event. But I spoke to somebody who had a sign that he'd made that looked like the American Gothic painting, you know, the man and the woman in the field in front of their house holding like a pitchfork, but they were wearing lab coats, and he had written on it, "Farmers and scientists work to feed your body and mind. We're more alike than we are unlike." And he was immunobiologist who grew up in rural Oregon, and his point was that politics make it seem like scientists or researchers and people from rural communities are in opposition in their goals and their beliefs, but he kind of fits both of those categories and sees ways that scientists and people in rural communities actually have a lot of the same goals and same interests. And so that was kind of what he was out representing. So I liked his sign.
That's actually a great segue. I was going to ask, what, when you were talking to people on the ground, what motivated them to get out there to march for science, which is such an abstract concept?
A lot of the people that I talked to were, either researchers, or I talked to a nurse. I talked to all kinds of different people who have professional backgrounds in science. I also talked to a retired attorney whose kids were hydrologists, and a lot of them were motivated by being concerned by just, science becoming politicized. And they would say things like, it's up to policymakers to decide what to do with scientific information, but the science has to be heard, and it has to be, that data needs to be collected before those decisions can be made. I also got to talk to the rally organizers in Tucson, and they were pretty inspiring because they're pretty young. It's three students from the University of Arizona, and they range in age from 20 to 24. And they were motivated in part by being kind of shocked when they realized, the current administration's budget proposal cuts, they were telling me, cuts the EPA's budget by 31%. And so all three of them are students in the sciences at the University of Arizona. And so they've really benefited from federal funding for the sciences, either through their coursework or through opportunities they've had to do outreach with local students or in other various ways. And so when they hear things about budget cuts to federal funding for the sciences, that really motivated them. Actually, the one who first got his other two friends involved in planning this march had wanted to go to the march in Washington that Elizabeth, you attended, but he couldn't afford to fly out there. So then the next best option was to organize a march that he and other students could attend here. So I also heard people talking about that.
Elizabeth, could you give us a little bit of this wider context? What are scientists worried about with the new administration? What policies have them concerned?
Well, one of the policies that everybody seemed to be talking about is President Trump's views on climate change. President Obama had a very strong agenda on climate change. He led the rest of the world in signing an agreement in Paris to rein in climate change emissions, and his agencies were busy trying to do a whole range of things in order to help the country rein in its greenhouse gas emissions, including from power plants and from vehicles, especially from cars and light trucks, but also from big trucks as well. There were lots of things, cleaning up the methane emissions from oil and gas industry. Oh, and also just making the government greener. The government is a huge purchaser, especially the Department of Defense, but across the board. And if you slash greenhouse gas emissions from the government, then that helps to pressure the market towards greener and greener activities. And there were big commitments on that side. And nearly all of those priorities are now either being rolled back by President Trump and his administration, or are now being reviewed for possible rollbacks. And many of the people I talked to at the rally, just from looking at their signs and their shirts, it was clear that climate change is on everybody's mind. One of the signs that I saw along those lines was, "Climate change is real. Donald Trump is a hoax." So, I think that there's this strong feeling that comes from the questioning that President Trump's cabinet members have started into, not whether maybe climate change is real, but they're questioning the human role in it, and they're questioning a lot of other things, and just whether or not we have to, as a society, do anything about it or be leaders in that rain. So that's part of it. And then across the board, on a whole variety of different issues, President Trump's budget proposal requests reductions in funding for all kinds of different science, including medical science. And a lot of people find that very troubling because the federal government in the U.S. is a big funder of research, and that research is important for developing new drugs and for developing new cleaner technologies for a whole raft of things. That issue was very prominent as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to West Obsessed, where we discuss issues critical to the American West. I'm Kate Schimmel, joined via Skype by Maya Kapoor and Elizabeth Shogren. Maya, you've been looking into some of what Elizabeth just mentioned in terms of there being really big implications for cutting back science funding. Locally, how important is scientific research and science funding to Western states?
Yeah, so that's something that I was looking into. And one thing I did was I looked specifically in Arizona, since I'm here right now. And I spoke to the senior vice president for research at the University of Arizona to get an idea for how having a research institution in a city can impact that city's economy. And what they've found is that, you know, there's multiple ways that having an institution that brings in federal funding affects a local economy. And so one way is direct. So when a researcher gets federal grant money to do research, they then go out and, you know, hire people to do the research with them. They purchase equipment. There's the indirect ways that there are impacts, which is, you know, you might make a spin-off company. You might decide to stay in the place where you're doing your research and start your own business. Then there's the benefits to society. If you're a medical researcher and you develop medical technologies or cures that help all of us. I went and spoke to some people who started a local brewery called Borderlands, and it was started by a microbiologist and a medical student who were at the university and started this brewery where every month people come and talk about their space exploration research, and other scientists do presentations on their research once a month, and people from the local community come and just have a beer and, you know, learn about the science research that's happening at the university. So that's sort of one of those like spin-offs that happen that connect the science with the community, but also adds money to the local economy. So it's a multiplier effect. So Tucson really thinks of itself as a city of science. But to actually put numbers on it, I dug into the Arizona Board of Regents' most recent report from 2013, and more than $1 billion came into the Arizona economy through research expenditures in 2013. And just to disclose, in 2013, I was a student at the University of Arizona. So, and then other states as well. For instance, Colorado has one of the highest densities of research laboratories and facilities in the nation. And there's an organization there that does a calculation every couple of years, and they found that, you know, more than $2.5 billion comes into the Colorado state economy through research facilities every year. And that goes to hiring people, that goes to making purchases, that goes, you know, it spreads out through the economy. So there's those concerns when the federal government talks about cutting funding to the sciences. There's those, you know, very real local concerns about how that's going to affect economies in the West as well.
Many of the organizers of the marches in D.C. and elsewhere were pretty direct about saying that they were nonpartisan, but they clearly hoped that something would come of those marches. Elizabeth, can you give us a sense of what folks you met were hoping would come of marching in the streets with these signs pointing to "I'm with her" and that sort of thing?
Well, there are a variety of things. Of course, different people had different motivations. I think one of the things everybody wanted was that the policies that are made in Washington, D.C., and I guess across the country, are made with good scientific input, that the data that policymakers are given and that the facts that they use when talking about their policy choices are, in fact, real facts and not, as people like to say now, alternative facts. And so I think that that's a big part of it, was people just wanted science to be elevated in decision making and not to be chased into a corner. And they don't want people who say climate change isn't real to be making decisions about what our nation does about climate change, for example, or that vaccines are dangerous to be making those kinds of decisions about, you know, researching new vaccines and whether funding levels should be increased or decreased on those kinds of things. That, I think, it was across the board.
Maya, I was curious to get your take on why folks felt like they needed this kind of attention. It seems obvious in some communities, at least, that science is important. Why did folks you talked to seem to think that it was important to march for science in a place like Tucson?
You know, that seems like a good question, because it is a place that prides itself on, you know, it calls itself a city of science. But I think that, you know, people really, so the march organizer, it's funny because I got to talk to the march organizers who, like I mentioned, the oldest one was 24. And then I also spoke to a few people at the march who were retirees. And I said, is this your first march? And they were like, no, we were marching in the 60s. You know, so I got a really big spectrum of political experience. And the march organizers really felt compelled to act because they said things to me like, you know, we've heard about what it was like before the EPA existed. And it really hurts to think that there are politicians who are okay with the possibility of going back to how it used to be. So from them, I was hearing urgency around concerns with, you know, public health, the integrity of the scientific process. One of them said something along the lines of, you know, we rely on policymakers to make good policy, but it's the job of the scientists to provide the information. So they thought, you know, a relationship there where, like, let us give you information and then you please give us policy. And they wanted to keep that relationship intact. And then the retirees I spoke to who have been active for longer than I've been alive, I think for them it's just, you know, part of what they do as Americans. It's, they see an issue that they care about, which is, you know, one of them was a lawyer, a retired lawyer, and she said to her this was about freedom of speech, and she saw science being gagged, like people's ability to express scientific information completely was being suppressed. And so that's what she was marching about, because she was a retired attorney.
Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit more about what she might be concerned about for listeners who might not be familiar with the concerns about suppression of science that she's referencing?
Well, I think one of the concerns is whether the data that government scientists have gathered through the years and that supports their research and supports conclusions that scientists have made across the globe will still be available, and if the data that government uses to support its decisions will in fact be accurate data and not manipulated. There have been lots of concerns about that among lots of scientists, that the data and the information used to make decisions won't be transparent and won't be available the way it has been up until now. In fact, even today there was on social media, there was a big concern about whether EPA was keeping one of its open data site running. It seems like EPA is now saying it will, but there was a lot of vigilance around whether or not that would be happening. So whether or not it would be coming down. That's related a little bit to the government shutdown that might happen if Congress can't decide on a continuing resolution to fund the government. But it's just a sign that there's like a great deal of stress right now among scientists that somehow this particular administration can't be trusted to maintain scientific integrity.
That's really interesting. You say this is a moment when scientists can't trust the government, that their integrity will be upheld. I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on that and tell us how real those concerns are. Have we already seen stepbacks, or is much of this worry premature?
Well, you know, I haven't done any reporting recently on whether there are stepbacks. It has become more difficult to find some of the information that was readily available before on various agency websites, in part because the government is changing its priorities. One of the things that scientists from government agencies have talked to me about is that there are new ways of phrasing things with the new administration versus the old administration. And one example of that would be that you might be pursuing some kind of policy because it would reduce emissions of greenhouse gases. And that might be the biggest reason that the government's supposed to be doing this, according to the last administration. Well, the new administration doesn't have reducing greenhouse gases as a top priority. So now if you go to documents that talk about that, the policy, they might be stressing something else like energy efficiency or something else entirely. So there is a lot of reworking of priorities under this administration, and that gives people concern.
One thing that I hear in what you're saying, and that's fascinating to me, is that you have this gulf, not just in the facts that people point to and the research that people rely on, but you have this gulf in culture and priorities between the scientists who are marching and the government as they're taking action. And some of that seems to be about the value of science, and some of that seems to be policy disagreements. And I think it's really hard for folks to parse, you know, how much of this is political theater and how much of this is real, important, impactful conversations that we should be having as a country. Do we want to rely on science for policy or not? And if not, then what? Yeah, it's hard for me to kind of wrap my head around, I think. But I have been really fascinated watching these marches and watching the really disparate reactions online and among people I know, in terms, even among scientists. Do they think this is the most important thing they should be doing? Should they be getting out in the streets and rallying for science, which they might say is fundamentally not political? Or should they be going about their research and trying to make connections in their own local community?
One thing I heard from a scientist who has become an activist since President Trump became president is that she hasn't had as much time for doing her science, and that that is very troubling to her. And she yearns for the days when she could spend all of her time doing the science that she cares about instead of, you know, being an activist, because that's not getting the science done. And I think that that is, it's a very interesting situation. Most scientists are trained not to be activists, but to be out of the fray. And so this is a very uncomfortable position for many scientists to step into, to somehow become advocates for science instead of, you know, just doing their science and letting somebody else decide what to do as a result of what that research shows. It's something very different from somebody like Bill Nye, who's obviously been an advocate for science for decades, and he would fall very easily into this position. But you could see a little discomfort in some of the folks I met at the DC march. They're trying to figure out, you know, one of the big slogans of these marches is science, not silence. And you read through some of the material and it almost sounds like they want scientists now to go and be advocates for science in their own communities, almost like missionaries, teaching them to go out and talk to community groups about science, what is science, to try to reach to the greater public to understand why scientific integrity is important and why science should be, that policy should reflect sound science. And I'm sure that's a really, it's a different role for scientists to kind of step out and try to be missionaries for science.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to West Obsessed, where we discuss issues critical to the American West. I'm Kate Schimmel, joined by Maya Kapoor and our DC correspondent, Elizabeth Shogren. We were just discussing the uncomfortable role that scientists have found themselves in terms of being advocates for science and advocates for science-based policy. Elizabeth, one final question. Do you think scientists will continue to organize? Are we going to see as you say, more and more scientists taking on the role of advocates and community organizers?
I think so. There are new groups that are trying to recruit political candidates from among scientists, and they are getting a lot of scientists willing to take training in how to become a political candidate, and that will be interesting to see if it makes a difference. They think that the way their brains work could help, get through some of the log jams that have existed in our society for a long time. Scientists, they say, are all about solving problems, and they hope that they could figure out a way to get more scientists in government at local, state, and federal levels. So we'll see if what happens there, growing out of these marches and growing out of this other effort that's been underway for quite some time since the election, and that is that there are groups around the country who are scrutinizing federal data to see what is going on with the federal websites and whether there's any manipulation going on with data. That kind of close scrutiny will continue and grow even more fervent. And then there's this group that I was with at the march in D.C. called 500 Women Scientists. And what they are doing is creating chapters around the country, kind of like support groups to help women scientists in particular to work on these issues of maintaining scientific integrity and not letting the federal government somehow influence the science that's going on, and to push back when there are funding cuts and things like that, but also to specifically focus on women scientists and to make sure that they are part of the process, part of the scientific process. So there's an inclusivity as part of that, a feminism that's growing stronger and stronger, and that, there weren't groups like this before. And so, I mean, I'm sure there were some groups like this, but this is a new, this movement is growing as a result of President Trump being elected. And I think that's fascinating.
Maya, any future things we can expect happening in Tucson around the March for Science and science activism?
Well, interestingly, one thing that the organizers told me is that, I mean, they were stunned when they found out how expensive it would have been to have a march. And so that is something that they want to look into as their next project. Why is it so expensive to have, a political march to express, your basic fundamental beliefs? I mean, that should be a fundamental right in the U.S. And so after the dust settles with this, their next project is to look into that, because it's not nearly as expensive in other towns in this state. So it's kind of not about science, but it's interesting to see how their political activism is evolving. But just to kind of second what Elizabeth said, I think one of the fascinating things about scientists is that they are natural problem solvers and collaborative, and they're naturally collaborative. And so you put a problem before them, and they get together and try to solve them. So I think that we're going to see more of this in future, and that's pretty inspiring.
Well, thanks you two, and to the listeners. You can be sure High Country News and KVNF will stay on top of this story. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about science and its impact on the West, you can visit our website at hcn.org. Or to continue the conversation online, you can visit kvnf.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Elizabeth.
It was great.
And thank you, Maya.
Thank you.
For West Obsessed, I'm Kate Schimmel, Deputy Editor, Digital at High Country News. Thanks so much for listening.